Hi, this is Tom and Cecil from Cognitive Dissonance, and we took a left at the valley.
We did take a left at the valley.
And a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
And then the left at the valley goes right to a glory hole. It's like right to a glory hole.
I know we shouldn't have to scream that we're atheists. You know, we don't have non-astrologers and all that. But with the religious people taking over the world, I mean, we can either speak up or be pushed into a corner.
I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, a non-believer, an infidel, a heathen. I call it how I see it. I say it's ignorance and you just call it faith. And unsubstantiated claims, that's something to be ashamed. I'm an atheist.
Coming at you from Festive BZ, this is Left of the Valley. My name is Kevin, and I ask you to suppose you were an idiot, and suppose you were a member of Congress, but then I repeat myself. Joining me as usual is a team that, unlike most people, are afraid of heights, they are afraid of width.
Yeah, I definitely don't mind heights, but if there's a long stretch of just like nothing that's just empty forever, I'm like, no, thank you.
You've never been to Alberta, have
or
you?
Or Saskatchewan.
She always does the right thing because it gratifies some people and astonishes the rest. Nancy.
Oh, I really like that. Mm. I like that. That's my t-shirt of the month.
Another t-shirt.
Absolutely.
Her truest fear to wake up one day and discover her high school class runs the country, Christina.
Jesus Christ. It would be me. I was homeschooled. That class would be me.
And after much study, she determined that a black cat crossing your path signifies that it's going somewhere.
No, that you have a chance to cuddle a cat.
You can't. It's study.
I own a black cat, and he's my favorite, and I'm his favorite.
Yeah, my favorite's a white cat.
Oh, that was so racist.
Wow.
All right.
That sounded really racist.
Ladies, welcome back. Hope you had a great week.
Then there's Oliver.
It was pretty decent.
Oh, God, this show is already off the rails. We haven't even started.
Because I'm here.
Yes.
Well, you got two ladies talking about their cats. That's...
Yeah,
it's the only way
welcome
you can
to the
start
old
show.
Cat show.
You know, in a lot of ways, our show is like the on valve of a pressure cooker.
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
like of all week we've
it's
stored up all of these, you know, all of these different things that we can't talk.
We've
about
held
anyone
in our
else.
Screams of anguish,
and all it needs is for you to say, "How was your week, ladies?"
Yeah.
Or what, and it's like.
Well, we need that. We
all
need,
over the place.
We need that clip of like the women doing yoga with the Grinch, and it's like release the the sounds in your mind, and the Grinch just starts screaming.
That's the best clip ever.
It's me.
So today is our essentially our last show where we have an interview, and we'll present later on the interview Nancy and I had with Tom and Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance. But first. Let's do a bit of chit-chat. So, did you guys hear? There's a city councilor in Victoria that basically made the news this week because he essentially said that he didn't want to pay and use money for Christmas decorations. And it made a big fuss in the press. He was saying that he didn't want to receive poinsettia flowers and stuff like that because they were Christian
what?
Symbols.
What?
Yes.
How is a poinsettia a Christian symbol?
Well, it's not. But in his mind, you know, anything that was Christmas theme was a Christian symbol and should not be represented.
I'm pretty sure if you hand someone, like, the Jewish, like, candle thingy,
mm-hmm.
not
the
Christian.
Menorah.
The menorah. Yeah. Not Christian.
No, I agree. There was a huge backlash right off the bat for this city councilor. And a lot of the public was actually kind of outraged by it. And unfortunately, I don't know if I should say unfortunately about this, but he's actually correct. By law, he's actually correct. As a representative of the government, and according to the Supreme Court ruling of 1987, Canada is supposed to rule as a secular country, therefore separation of church and state, etc.
But you can have Christian Christmas decorations that aren't religious, like snowflakes... Snowmen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was his point. He says if you're putting decorations like snowflakes, you know, Santa and all that, that's fine. It's anything that was of a religious denomination.
Yeah, like the nativity scene.
I just think he didn't really express himself properly about this.
And the poinsettia is not Christian.
No, the poinsettia is not Christian.
That's ridiculous.
It's not. I believe it's pagan. But can you argue that pagan is a religious symbol? I don't know.
But you know, but thinking about it, because I agree with the councilman. But how many Muslim families give poinsettias to their relatives at this time of year? How many Jewish families? They typically don't. Mm-hmm. It's exchanged with Christian.
Yes.
They do put them on desks and in public places because they're considered secular. But, you know, the root of it is really Christian, and it's the Christian idea of the 25th that dominates. Mm-hmm. You don't see that many menorahs. You don't mm-hmm. see Kwanzaa. You don't see anything else. Mm-hmm. And I agree that spending a lot of money on decorations that are festive, that's fine. But have the snowflakes and the snowmen and the menorah and the Kwanzaa, whatever symbols there are of everybody, have it more inclusive than dominated exactly. by one particular group.
So at the risk of being unpopular there and not going necessarily with what people are saying, this guy is actually correct. He's just not expressing himself properly.
Yeah.
If you're going to put Christmas decorations and Christian-themed decorations for Christmas, that is fine, but you also have to do that for every other holiday of every other faith.
Yeah, exactly.
In the name of equality. Now, the best thing to do, because we're talking about public funds, and nobody likes to spend frivolously taxpayer money, and this is why usually governments usually opt out for saying, we're not going to put anything at mm-hmm. all. So we're being equal and not putting anything, or you could be equal in putting up everything. So you could put decorations for Ramadan, put decorations for Hanukkah, decorations for Kwanzaa, decorations for God knows what X religion goes out there. And I'm perfectly fine with that. But, like most people would say, it's a waste of money. Well, in that case, then don't put any of it at all. Unless you're putting, like, completely neutral mm-hmm. Theme decorations. So, perfect. Now, last week, we talked about a little Christmas song, Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Yes, we did. That was a really good conversation.
Well, it's not over.
Ooh, there's more?
There's more. Because now the CBC decided to go back and decided, okay, we're going to put the song back
okay.
on. And I think last week I was listening to the show there, and what I really wanted to express, which I didn't express properly into your dissenting mm-hmm. opinion there, Christina, is I think what people are, they're not offended with the idea of a corporation deciding to not play a song
yeah.
and the song is accessible somewhere else. That's not the problem. I think the problem arises when people are fed up with people being triggered by something like this. Because, frankly, let's face it, if you're triggered by this song, what the hell is wrong with you? No offense.
I don't think you can get mad at people for getting triggered by things.
Why?
Because, like,
there's nothing to be triggered at with this.
Well, the thing is, when people have gone through traumatic experiences, you can't control what is going to bring you back to that moment. And sometimes, it's, like, for me, with things that have happened in my past, if I see anything related to the BC Lions, mm-hmm. I get really messed up in my head.
But
it can just be like the picture of like the symbol, and it's there's roots to it. I try to mitigate that as much as possible. But if someone was like, "Oh, well, that's ridiculous," like just get over it. Like there's a root to that. Like if someone has been roofied,
mm-hmm.
that line could totally be a trigger.
I understand that, but at some point, I think, and I think this is where the right wing actually scores points. You got to come to a point and say, you know what, the trigger point of one individual or 10 individual or even 100 individual should not outweigh what the greater good for the public is. And
but how is playing a song the greater good?
Well. In this country, for example, there are like, I might be getting some letters about this because, you know, there are like 35 million of us.
Yeah.
And how many people are triggered by this Baby, It's Cold Outside?
Probably not tons.
Yeah. Probably mm-hmm. not, you know.
Yeah.
We don't know. And mm-hmm. the thing is, are we overly sensitive or something like that? If I take another example, there are some people that really suffer PTSD for being at war,
mm-hmm.
and something that triggers them are fireworks.
Yeah.
Right? The sound of fireworks mm-hmm. kind of sounds like explosions yeah, and totally. Stuff like that. And yet, nobody's really banned fireworks.
I think this is where it comes in. And I think this actually also plays into the Baby, It's Cold Outside conversation is people have to understand their own triggers. Like me with the BC Lions, or half balding men are super like mess me up.
Jeez, it's a good thing you get a full
I know, right? But for me, I know those triggers, so I when I can mitigate them. Like if I know I'm going to be going somewhere that I might see that, or I can try to do something that'll calm me down or help me get through that.
Mm-hmm.
So like for the fireworks with people with PTSD, they can if you know that that's a trigger for you, you can do things that will help you get through it. And with the baby, sorry, I'm jumping here. With the baby, it's cold outside song. If people know that that song is a trigger for them and it's on the radio, then they can just turn it off.
What do you both of you feel about trigger warnings before something?
Oh, I love them.
Well, I think you'd be putting a trigger warning on just absolutely everything because everybody's an individual.
There
right?
are things that are triggering to a higher percentage of people.
Yeah, but right there in your example, so sorry to cut you off.
Yeah,
but
right there in your
example, you just said, you know, you have these triggers and these triggers, and you are dealing with them.
Yes.
But when you have something like Baby It's Cold Outside, what you're essentially saying is, I'm having these triggers, but I want society to deal with them.
Well, but my conversation last week was that if a radio station decides not to have it on because they know that that might be triggering for people.
Yeah.
100%, that's their choice.
Yeah, of course, that's a corporate choice.
I don't think you should ban, like someone should ban it so no one can listen to this.
No, of course not.
Like that, I don't agree with. But I don't have any problem with a corporation being like, we aren't going to play the song for these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's reasonable for people in our society to expect everyone to, I'm trying to think of the right word, to be understanding of your triggers. Because there are a lot of people who just don't understand it. And a lot of people have very unique, like me. Like you could never put a trigger warning on balding men, like
or a car backfiring.
For that, it's very specific. But if you're going, say there's like a podcast and you're going to be talking about like sexual assault,
mm-hmm.
like that is a common thing that people might just not want to listen to. Like for me, when I'm having a bad day, I'll look at the descriptions of, like, if I listen to news podcasts, and I'll look at the description. And recently in the podast, it was going through, it was like, there was a 7-year-old girl that had died, and I was just like, I'm not in a place to listen to that, so I'm not going to listen to those podcasts today. But then when I was in a better mind space, I went back and listened to them, because I knew that I wasn't going to, like, be brought into like a horrible mind space from it. But when I had first read the description, I knew that I was in a place that if I listened to that, I was going to be messed up, because I have previously listened to podcasts like with the Jamal Khashoggi murder. Like I was having a great day and I listened to that, and it just like my brain was just messed up. I didn't even expect that that would mess me up, but it did. And so like, there's only so much trigger warnings you can put on something to help people.
But is it the responsibility of society to be completely always on the vanguard to try to help an individual with his or her perceptive problems?
Which is a valid question, because if you have a trigger and you know what the trigger is,
mm-hmm.
such as the Khashoggi or the 7-year-old girl, and I agree with you. From a totally different perspective, they're bothersome to me. They're horrible to me. I'm my mind is never going to be in a space where I want to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So my choice is I turn it off.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if I know a song, if I'm listening to the radio, and they've got a news story that has to do with abuse of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
That radio, I mean, it's off.
Yeah.
And then I check maybe a minute later whether I can go back to it or not. So I'm able to take the responsibility and do, you know, the best thing mm-hmm. for my mental state. Mm-hmm. And the radio station is doing what they need to do, which is playing current news for people mm-hmm. who want to listen.
The thing is, okay, my father, in his infinite wisdom, said a few wise things to me. And one of the things he said to me, he says, your rights end where the rights of others begin.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm okay with that. But you see, when you get a company like the CBC who decides to pull Baby It's Cold Outside, they don't do that out of the blue. They do that because they receive feedback.
Well, I think it's because a lot of women
have complained.
Have experienced getting drugs.
Yeah, but so it's not like the CBC.
A lot of women that...
Yeah, but it's not like the CBC decided, well, you know what, that lyric, Baby It's Cold Outside, a lot of women may have these triggers, so maybe we shouldn't take a chance. No, they probably responded, this is speculation, of course, they probably decided to pull this because some people have complained about that song.
Because it probably was distressing for them.
Well, maybe what they should do, instead of complaining about the song, is do what Nancy exactly did and turn it off when it plays.
But there is a balance to... wanting to advocate for yourself mm-hmm. because if half the population is women and a large percentage of women have experienced
yeah, of course.
Sexual assault or harassment, and that could be triggering for them.
Well, I'd be really surprised if a large percent of women that have experienced assault are triggered by that song. I would be really surprised.
Well, you know, if you take a song like that and people complain, are they complaining out of knowledge or are they complaining out of misunderstanding? And I think in a large measure, complaining about that song is misunderstanding, because the people who look at it in terms of Me Too are not saying to themselves, this is in context in the 1950s mm. or 60s.
Yes.
And at that point, it was a lively tune. People liked it, and they knew it was slightly risque, mm. but it didn't trigger ideas of rape
yeah.
drugs and,
yeah.
and drinks. So if I say to you, I'm really sorry you complained about this song, maybe it would help if you understood where the song came from and that the lyrics have nothing to do with mm-hmm. date rape. Maybe that would enlighten people to say, oh, okay, well, I can choose to listen to it or not, but I don't have to get upset that mm-hmm. it's a rape song mm-hmm. because now I understand it wasn't written yesterday. It was in the 1950s, mm-hmm. which is a totally different era.
I think one way you can look at it isn't people, a lot of people understand that this song isn't actually, like when she does say, what's in this drink, like, I think a lot of people understand that that isn't referring to Rohypnol. Like, people understand that. But you can't control what triggers you. You can't be like, I understand that when this song was written, it was in these contexts, and that is not what this song means. But if you're just in your car and it comes on the radio, you can't just tell your brain not to react to that.
No, but you can't tell your brain how to react to it, though. Right? I mean, you don't...
No, you can't.
No, well, okay, you're having a reaction. You have an unpleasant reaction. But it's not like it forces you to grab the phone and make a complaint.
No.
Right? You can basically say, okay, I don't like this. I'm going to turn it off. Or you yeah. can say... You have a myriad of options here. I'm just saying, I don't understand why we're forcing the greater public to become the custodian of what triggers just about everybody, because it becomes an infinite problem. Because if I'm triggered by canes and I see people walking around with cane and I start complaining about people walking around with canes, what the hell is that, right?
As someone who is actually triggered by canes.
Jeez, probably don't like this little thing here.
Well,
I got
it for me, like I like for me, because I have things that in throughout my life have made very negative impacts on my mental state. Mm-hmm. And through my future, I will carry that mental scar. And I have to know that,
mm-hmm.
but I have to speak up for myself.
Yeah, of
if
course.
I'm in a situation where I know something is triggering for me and I can do something about it, I have to speak up for myself. And
I think that's true, and I'm going to stop you because mm-hmm. before you say the next sentence, I want to go back to what Kevin said in a few sentences ago, is that your rights, you know, end where somebody else. At what point is it your responsibility, or where is it the responsibility of a person who is triggered to understand that they're working through all of these issues and trying to be able to deal more positively with the real world and things come up? Where is it your responsibility to say, I have to deal with this trigger in my own way to make myself healthy, and I can't expect... I can hope that the world will be sensitive to where I am, but I can't expect them to totally change the reality or the presentation in order to satisfy me. There has to be a balance.
And I definitely think that it's always on.
Does that make sense to you?
No, it definitely does. I think it's always on the person with the trigger to understand what their trigger is and try to mitigate it. But I don't, with the Baby It's Cold Outside song, I don't think that anyone who contacted CBC, letting them know how this song impacted them, I don't think people were like, just because of me, this song can't be played. There might be people that thought that. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a gap of information we don't have there.
But I know for myself, if there was a song that I knew was triggering for me, I would, and it was commonly played on the radio, I would have no issue writing in and just explaining my situation, because obviously there were a lot of people that wrote in about this.
Yeah, well, this...
And so obviously it was impacting a lot of people.
But why do you expect that you should write in instead of just turning it off? Why do you take that step of writing in?
Why
do you expect that they should accommodate you?
But that's the issue. If I did write in to CBC, say I had experienced date rape, date rape, just I had been drugged.
Or you have an aversion to 1940s music.
Exactly.
Whatever.
I know for myself, I would write in to inform them of how this impacted me, just so that they could know, and if there were enough voices that spoke up.
Okay.
And because it's not just one person that's saying this.
No, of course not.
It's a lot of people that this song has a negative impact on mentally. And I don't think it's... I don't think we should shame anyone who wrote in, I'm sure those people did turn it off when they were listening to it. But I can imagine those people were wanting to advocate for other people who were going through the same mental anguish and dealing with their own history and traumatic pasts. Because as someone who has the ability to write in, you realize that there are people who don't have that ability.
Yeah, but I can understand the ability to write in if you're facing something like discrimination. But this is not what you're facing here. This is a personal thing to you. And although you're not alone, it's still a personal thing to you. I'm just wondering, why do you think that you have a choice here? The responsibility could be on your shoulders. You could take the responsibility and walk away or withdraw yourself from the situation, or you can put the responsibility on the shoulder.
I think you can do both.
But I don't understand why you feel that you should put the responsibility of the shoulder on the CBC, for example.
But the issue, I don't think it is putting one, like, I guess where I'm coming from, like, I don't see how that's putting the responsibility on the CBC's shoulder, because it's their choice if they want to play that or not.
But aren't you writing the letter to express your situation?
Yeah.
You're a voice for other people. I understand that. But do you feel that voicing your opinion means that the radio station has to immediately take responsibility and change their programming?
Not at all.
Because if if there are a substantial number of people who say, don't play any more Christmas music because it's very sad for me. I've lost family members. Mm-hmm. I get the blues. Yeah. I get depressed at Christmas.
A lot of people get depressed at Christmas.
Please don't play any Christmas music. And by the way, with Easter coming up, I don't like Easter bunnies. And as long as I'm writing you, I might as well let you know that Halloween scares me to death. What is a radio station supposed to do if they get... I would say, let's say they get 100, 150, 200 letters. At what point do they say, I will take these people seriously and change my programming, or write them a letter and say, I'm really sorry, we are very sympathetic, but we play things on our station that... go along with the media codes. Mm-hmm. We don't play anything illegal or pornographic or inciting a riot or some things like that. We're very sorry to hear of your difficulty, but we do play for the greater majority, and you know we hope you find a way to deal with your issues in a positive way. But at what point should they change?
This is the other side of the equation we're not talking about here. I mean, the CBC, for example, is a corporation, and they're worried about revenue. Yeah. So they're worried at some point if Christina decides to tune into another channel because of that, and there's like 3,000 more like her, that they're losing valuable time for their advertisers. So the problem is really, really complex when you think about it, because you had capitalism putting itself in there. Mm-hmm. They get psychology. But anyway, we're not going to solve this.
No, I don't think the advertisers would pull out, you know, if a radio station gave in to... If they had a listening audience of 3 million people and 200 people write letters, the advertisers are on the side of the corporate structure.
Where is that line? Where is that gray zone? Right?
There is a line, and we got into a marvelous discussion about that.
No kidding.
Line
which threw the show really off kilter because I had a whole bunch of things I wanted to talk about, but now I'm looking at the time.
Wait, you just have
I do just have one point on this. I think.
Oh, hey, how are you there?
I know I am here. Well, I couldn't get a word in edgewise between the two of you going at it. I think first of all, two things. One, when this specific discussion with Baby It's Cold Outside, we don't know what actually caused them to take it off the air. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very important part that we would need to actually have to go even deeper into that discussion.
I think that's a good point.
Otherwise, you're just assuming, and you know what they say about assuming. Mm-hmm. You're just assuming that it comes from it. And it's very likely that it very well could have come from all those letters, but you don't know that for an absolute fact.
Yeah.
And that would make a big difference in why they may have taken it off the air and to why they're now putting it back on.
Okay.
And when it comes to trigger warnings, my second point, I think it's important to be aware that you don't know what might cause a trigger for somebody, like that what might trigger someone, but just to kind of be aware and just accepting that some things that might not be a bother to you might be a bother to somebody else. And if you see that a lot of, like, this one thing seems to be triggering a lot of people, you can make that decision for yourself as a person or as a company or whatever into what you're going to do about it.
Anyway, we'll move on here because God knows we could do an entire show just about that.
Oh. We kind of did.
I could sum, but there was an article in the Province this last week that, regardless of what side you're on, I think deserves some merit. So if we could close the, we hadn't planned on this, but
no. let's we're way behind schedule.
Yeah, let's do this, and then let's invite
schedule.
What I think we would like to, I'm speaking for everybody now. Mm-hmm. I think what we'd like to do is any of our listeners that would like to weigh in on this and you have an opinion and or you have something that you'd like to say, please let us know. Yeah. Because if we feel this way and we see, you know, various sides of it, I'm sure those of you who are listening would too. And whatever points you'd like to make, please let us know.
This is the kind of conversation our friend Jessica, the therapist, sent us a letter about. Yeah. And we made a new friend with it. So send us some more letters.
Anyway, so here's the letter that was written. And it wasn't written by a journalist. This is just sent in by
an opinion piece.
By an opinion writer. Here we go. If the politically correct police who have recently condemned the song Baby It's Cold Outside for being suggestive of date rape are looking for other politically incorrect Christmas carols to censor, may I suggest they look carefully at Santa Baby, in which a woman asks Santa to bring her a sable coat and a convertible because she's been an awful good girl. Really? How so? Or how about some people might feel about now we don our gay apparel, or grandma got run over by a reindeer, in which grandpa seems to be quite unaffected by the death of his spouse. Then there is I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, kind of suggestive of adultery. How about the couple taking a sleigh ride while snuggled up together like two birds of a feather under a blanket? Snuggling, eh? Then we'll frolic and play in the Eskimo way. Are the Inuit happy with that? Or the Christmas lament of right-wing white supremacists, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know? Come on, PC police. Do your job properly and get to work weeding out all the rest of carols that suggest inappropriate values, some sentiments, and behaviors. Once you get carols cleaned up, you can start vetting all of the jazz, folk, blues, and rock and roll songs that have been corrupting our minds for so long. Mm. And this was written by Ray Arnold of Richmond.
Yeah. I think Ray, we're sticking to it a bit far, but anyway.
Yeah, I know. I it's a little, oh, what's the word? I can't think of it.
Anyway.
It's kind of poking a bit of jest at that.
In conclusion, I just wish people, before they write a letter to the CBC about being triggered or something like that, I'm really sorry if you're triggered by any event. I just wish people would take the step of maybe trying personal responsibility first.
I think they do.
Well, I don't get the impression of that, but then what do we know about this, really? Okay, moving on, because God knows we're way behind here. By the way, Bill C-51 passes. They've repealed the blasphemy law in Canada.
Oh, yay!
Barry Neufeld, you know this idiot that the anti-Soji was actually voted out of as a liaison of the board.
Really?
He's still a trustee, but he's no longer a liaison for the board. He basically he called himself a prophet one time. And basically said the elite will destroy all gay kids. The agenda is eugenics. Gosh. He's the guy who lost his mind, obviously.
Or he's just finally speaking his mind.
There was this guy, John Downing, 66. He was an Irish professor in France. He was killed by a suspect, Ali R, 37, from Pakistan, for insulting the prophet. 13 fatal stab wounds in the neck and the chest. The police found no... This is what I want to point out. The police found no reason to suspect terrorist connection. Which, the point is, Islam is violent, whether you like it or not. Sorry if you don't like it, but that's just what it is. And last but not least, the Yellow Jackets. I want to talk really, really quickly about this in France. People, you know, this is not a pro-conservative movement. I don't care what you say there. Trump's been going out there even saying that they want Trump-like stuff like that in France. If you even think that, you know nothing about the French. And for France, they're calling Macron the president for the rich. The problem, what triggered this was not even the carbon tax, because a lot of people say, oh, well, why are you so pro-environmentalist? The French don't like the carbon tax. It's not the tax itself. Macron basically decided to cut the wealth tax. The French didn't like it. And he's basically nickel and diamond into death. The carbon tax was the last straw. And now they're up in arms. And Macron essentially is trying to step back, as raise the minimum wage, and he's, you know, eliminating that carbon tax and all that, but it might be too late for him. Just want to point out that if you think this somehow is a anti-globalist movement, but it's a pro-nationalist Trump-like movement, you are wrong. It might be an anti-globalist movement, yes, but it's not a pro-Trump in any way, shape, or form. Do not fall for that. It's just stupid. If you think the French want somebody like Trump-like authoritarian figure in France, you're an idiot of the biggest kind. So, anyway, that's all I have to say about that. Moving on.
Worked through that, didn't we?
Exactly. All right, my dear Nancy, you got our top 10?
We sure do. Actually, I've got a top 5.
Okay.
Still keeping with I'm pulling us all in as a group, and it's actually my choice here. But with the theme of Christmas, Canada, Christmas and what Canada gives to the world, I'm going to do the top 5 places in Canada to go for Christmas.
Ooh.
Because there are places that are...
Grandma's house?
More Christmassy than others.
Your grandma or my grandma?
Yeah. My grandma's dead.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. Number 5 on the list, and I don't know whether or not, you know, we're aware of it, but the number 5 place to go is Edmonton.
Really?
Yeah. For American listeners, it's the capital of the province of Alberta. But New Year's Eve in Edmonton and Christmas are huge celebrations. And they're on the Saskatchewan, near the Saskatchewan River. And it's home to an honest-to-goodness candy cane lane. And there are 8 blocks in Edmonton's West End that are a festive wonderland every December. And on peak nights, just before Christmas, the spectacle can lead to traffic jams. So anyone that wants someplace to go next year, this is the time to start thinking.
Gee, you know,
check it out.
A traffic jam in Edmonton. I gotta say, that mall must be hell.
Yes, they have one of the biggest malls in the world.
They have the largest indoor amusement park.
Okay, but their water park is so much better than their amusement park.
Didn't they just redo their water park?
Did they?
I think they did something.
Ooh.
So that's number 5 on the list, but it may be number 1 on somebody else's, so check it out.
I need mountains.
Yeah, number 4... It's kind of funny because you'd think maybe we'd be a little higher up, but number 4 is Vancouver.
Really?
Yeah. So in Vancouver, they have the ship's parade. Has anybody gone to any of the things in Vancouver? They have the ship's parade of lights, and they have the festivities on the water, and then they have a lights parade around Falls Creek, and it's great for a romantic dinner if you do that. Mm-hmm. You can go to Stanley Park. And it's just a wonderful place. It's not particularly, you know, the whole town does not light up, but it's a lot
Christmas,
of good things to do.
Don't go to Vancouver.
Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah. Apparently, though, Harrison this year is amazing because it's all decked out in lights. They've decked out the whole city in lights.
But if you go to Vancouver for Christmas, you can also do some skiing. It's great because it's a jumping off place for people that like to ski or go to Whistler
is,
or other places. Yeah, it's a really great destination. So maybe next year. And if you come to Vancouver, you know, we're close by. And
you can
always come visit us on the show. So there's
a
bonus there. Number 3, Kevin's going to love this, Quebec.
Of course.
Yeah. And Quebec, they say, is a great place to spend the holiday because there are cobblestone lanes, a lot of white snow, beautiful architecture.
Horse-drawn carriages.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of festivals and a light show and a German market. So they say that Christmas in Quebec is one of the best celebrations in North America. Do you agree with that one?
I would agree with that.
Well,
although the little thing that's different here, our listeners might not know, especially our American listeners, Christmas in Quebec is done differently. We don't do this whole thing of waking up on the morning of the 25th. It's actually done the 24th at midnight.
Really?
Yeah, you wake up the kids at midnight, and that's when they come down and open up their presents. And then after that is usually a huge feast, like at God knows what time in the morning. And by the time you go back to bed, you're out there till...
So Christmas Day is sleeping day.
Pretty much. So if you're religious in any way, shape, or form, you go to midnight mass, obviously. But, you know, most Quebecers, I don't think, actually do that. But that's how it's done, which I was shocked when I first moved here in the West and people decide, what do you mean, no 24 at midnight? You gotta wait till the morning on the 25th? This sucks.
No. But that would be my personal favorite. If I had to choose some place to go, Quebec would definitely be the place to go, because if you can deal with the cold, that's where you want to be. Okay, number 2, Toronto.
Well,
which
I'm
is the largest city in Canada, and there's a lot of there's a 6-kilometer route through the heart of the city. There's more than 2 dozen floats, everything Ooh. From a donut house to dinosaur and Lego men and 20 marching bands, Father Christmas. So it really they have a cavalcade of lights and a big festival that ends in the lighting of a Christmas tree in the square in front of City Hall. So Toronto is such a big, diverse city. It's got to be. Have you been to Toronto for Christmas?
Not for years.
I haven't.
No,
not for years. Not for Christmas either.
I desperately want to go to the East Coast just to experience it.
Oh, well.
We can go to Fan Expo in Toronto.
Woo! Nerds!
Okay, so the number one, believe it or not, not knowing a lot of the details, would say the number one is Ottawa.
Ottawa?
Really? Would you choose Ottawa?
Ottawa.
They say that the reason it's number one, they have an illumination ceremony early in December, and then the parliament buildings have a lot of dramatic light. The prime minister flips the switch on it, and then they have ceremonies that include free hot chocolate, and they have a lot of caroling on Parliament Hill and more than 60 sites along Confederation Boulevard that have illumination displays. There are a lot of places to stay in Ottawa.
Cool.
So if you like history and you want to, you know, go to Parliament Hill at the same time, that's great.
Ottawa is one of those fascinating little towns because it's almost perfectly bilingual. Everybody speaks very good English. Well, so let me rephrase that. It's perfectly bilingual. Everybody speaks very poor English and very poor French. But it's never really good English and really good French, but they can speak both, but just poorly both.
Which, I'm having a blank moment. Which city has the ice skating on the river?
Hull, Gatineau. Between Ottawa and Hull, there's that river.
Oh, because it's Ottawa.
Well, it's Ottawa and Hull, right? They're like sister cities.
Oh, okay.
the river separates between them.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd want to do
so
that.
So while you're in Canada, here are the things, we only have the five, so here are some things while you're in Canada that people really like in terms of presents that they get from people.
Maple syrup.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no one, two, three, but here's the things that that people really like to get from us. They like calendars with scenes of the Rockies.
Oh,
love
yeah.
that. They love little stuffed moose wearing RCMP
uniforms. I just want the moose, not the RCMP.
I got you a moose that's the size of you.
I actually did get me a moose the size of me.
How tacky are these people?
Or, I think Kevin would like this, Canadian beer t-shirts and the absence of beer. You don't drink it, so you can wear it. Canadian rye whiskey, what do you think of that?
I'll send that to Tom and Cecil.
Yeah. They also like, and we like to send Tim Hortons travel mugs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And these are good for expats, too, that are down in the States or other parts of the world to help remind them of
those
home.
Timmy's travel mugs are the best. You can get, like, the kind of plastic ones. They're $8, and those suckers are almost spill-proof.
Oh, man. They're really great. Nice. Yeah. And maple syrup, of course. There's also maple leaf-shaped cookies.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a classic.
So good.
Those are the best cookies.
That's a classic.
Oh, my gosh. Now my mouth is watering.
Anything moose, bear, beaver related.
Yep.
That's wonderful.
Especially moose. Moose are my favorite.
Hockey jerseys.
Yeah.
People, you know, love hockey, whether they live here or
not. A moose playing hockey. There. A teddy of a moose wearing a hockey jersey playing hockey.
Yeah, and people also send little gag gifts like craft dinners,
oh my gosh,
Oreos,
yes.
vacuum packed salmon,
ketchup chips,
yeah,
milk in a bag.
Yeah. Or
I don't think you can send that over the border.
Finally, if you can't think of anything else, a large tin of Tim's coffee for those of you in the States.
Yes.
Tim's is like Dunkin' Donuts, the donuts on steroids. It's just much better.
Or,
we have a bigger variety.
Or if the person has sugar, like a sweet tooth, send them a thing of the French vanilla.
Yeah, mix. The French vanilla.
Because there's
good.
An instant mix.
Yeah.
So you just put it in water and it's amazing. I buy
it
too
is.
Much.
What's the other? It's not a caramel. It's a toffee. What is that other? The other
English toffee.
English toffee.
Oh.
But they don't make it anymore.
Oh,
I know.
Boy, that.
I know for a fact that
fabulous.
The Japanese really love maple syrup. It's a luxury item down there in Japan.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Anything else that wasn't on the list that you'd recommend as a Canadian gift to send to somebody?
a loony.
A loony.
Or a toony.
Or a toony.
Just
either one. Or our money, which is colorful. Much more colorful.
Yeah, which is not worth a lot anyway.
No.
Yeah. I saw.
But it's pretty
I stumbled upon a Viola Desmond $10 bill yesterday.
Oh, did you? Yes. Oh, I still haven't.
It looks really, really good, actually.
That's so
did you go
wonderful.
To the bank?
No, I was ordering some food there, and I happened to know the person I was working across the counter, and she showed me.
That's so awesome.
And instead of facing, you know how you have the bill horizontally,
yeah,
and the person faces, she's posed vertically.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to flip the bill up vertical. Yeah. So it looked really good. So
that's awesome.
Excellent. Anyway, moving on. My dear Kirsten.
Yes.
It's time for another brilliant moment.
Brought to you by religion. Sorry, that was a really weird voice I just did.
That was more of a Halloween theme thing.
Halloween's so much better than Christmas.
Anyway.
It is so much funner.
Okay, while we mute Christina.
Bastard.
Done.
Now I have the power. Alrighty. So, the Catholic Church is warning people of a financial scam that somehow doesn't involve them.
What?
Finally.
People in Michigan are apparently getting scammed by callers who claim to be members of the fictional St. Mary's Prayer Center Ministry. The way the scam works, at least in one recorded instance, is that if you want to receive prayers, you press a button and get transferred to an actual human being who asks you for seed money.
Oh.
The Catholic Diocese of Grand Rapids just sent out a warning letting people know this scam has nothing to do with them.
So this is the unholy alliance of the Catholic Church and the prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
And that's all well and good. But reader Mike had a number of questions for everyone involved in this story. Some of which I'm paraphrasing. What's the difference between the scam call and the Catholic Church in general? Both take your money without actually answering your prayers. Number two, setting aside the ministry's false name, why is the call a scam if it gives people hope? Number three.
I thought that was a major ingredient of a scam, that it gives you hope without any return.
This has got to be one of my favorite ones. Number three. What's the difference between a $10 prayer and a $100 one?
Ooh, that's a good question. It's a get priority shifted up to the front.
Number four, is the church jealous they didn't think of it first?
Oh, that's a good one.
And number five, who thought of this brilliant headline? Grand Rapids Diocese warns of prayer for money scam.
Oh my god.
You know things are bad when the church when they're warning people about the church.
Well, essentially they're trying to do is eliminate the competition, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think that's
essentially what they're trying to do. Hey, we're the number one scammers here. Thank you very much. Oh, the church. Oh my god. But that's okay. Maybe they can top it off. Now you get a $10 prayer, but you get a bonus molesting.
Oh my god.
A personal groping by the cardinal.
Oh my gosh. What if instead of like paying with money, like, here's my 5-year-old son.
Jesus Christ. Oh my god. That's horrible.
The Catholic Church is gross.
All churches are gross. They're all.
I know, but the Catholic Church is kind of like up there.
Well, it's probably because it's got so much more history than the rest of them, right? But I mean, if you put the evangelical movements and give it an extra 1,000 years, I'm sure we'd give a lot of stories out of that too.
I think the reason the Catholic Church is so much worse is because they're so centralized and they all have the same message.
Yeah.
And evangelical churches, each individual church is different.
Mm-hmm.
They're so different. They're not connected to each other very much. They have their differences. But the Catholic Church, you could just move people around.
Well, remember when we did the show with Thomas Westbrook there? He made some very excellent points about the Catholic Church. They're kind of unique in many aspects, mm-hmm. right? They have a country of their own.
Yeah.
They have an embassy. They have diplomatic immunity. They have a whole bunch of things that other churches don't have.
Yeah.
So it's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like comparing the local sandwich bar with McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, the local sandwich bar's got a Radnor sandwich, but McDonald's is, we aim at McDonald's right away because it's the top dog. And well, I think we do the same thing with the Catholics.
Well, this may be controversial, but if the Catholic Church had stayed with the original concept, if they had not branched off, you know, where they have all of these scandals, if they had, you know, all of the priests involved with little boys, the abuse and so forth and so on, it's a beautiful religion. I mean, if you just take people who want a faith that they can immerse themselves in, that has a lot of pomp and a lot of ceremony and a lot of beauty and a lot of ritual and a lot of comfort, you know, to people who lose their loved ones and so forth, it would be great. It really is a shame that it degraded into so many different scandals and the church, you know, amassing more money than and feeling that was more important in the long run than really helping people.
It's always been the true God is money. Yeah. Power, right? It's always been that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a movement that basically thinks they're eating their savior every Sunday and drinking his blood. And then that priest, when he pulled out that jar of mayo, that was it for me. I made that joke before. Thank you so much, ladies. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have Tom and Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance.
Yeah!
So stay with us.
In a world torn apart by a lack of reason,
or leash.
And I think it should be religion treated with ridicule and hatred and contempt. And I claim that right.
In the morning.
Hi, everybody. This is Robert Stanley from the Right to Reason podcast. And if you subscribe now, you'll get free.
Learn more about the broadcast at therighttoreason.com.
I'm the Supreme Irreverend Dr. Randy Tyson from the Legion of Reason Diversion. Join me and my co-hosts, Christine Shelska, Twyla, and Nate Phelps, as we explore issues at the intersection of atheism, humanism, and skepticism. Topics range from alternative medicine to the interference of religion in public policy. We often have special guests to help us understand the topic du jour. Previous guests include biologist Jerry Coyne, ex-Muslim author Ali Rizvi, philosopher Peter Boghossian, and the late physicist Victor Stanger. You can watch us on the Legion of Reason YouTube channel or subscribe to the audio version through your favorite podcatcher such as iTunes or Stitcher. And don't forget to like the Legion of Reason Facebook page.
Anti-Semitism was preached as an official doctrine of the church until 1964. Do you think that might have something to do with public opinion in Austria and Bavaria and Poland and Lithuania? That the Jewish people were accused collectively as a people of deicide, of the crime of the murder of God in the figure of Jesus of Nazareth. And that anathema on them was not lifted until 64, well after the perpetrators of the Holocaust had stood trial in secular courts and been rightly punished for their actions. How can this church say it has any moral superiority? It has difficulty catching up to what ordinary people regard as common moral and ethical sense, and it still can't make itself apologize properly.
Well, joining us online are two people that, if you listen to podcasts, they don't really need that much of an introduction. One of them is a great fan of Canadian whiskey, and the other one is Eli Bosick's best friend. They are snappy dressers and snazzy dancers, Tom and Cecil. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm not a fan of Canadian whiskey, so...
That's not what I heard.
You can properly call that shit whiskey.
It's like... Whiskey. It's the Coors Light of whiskey.
It's the varnish remover of whiskey.
Last time you were on the show, I believe you called it the beaver pelt squishing of whiskey or something like that.
Sounds about right.
It doesn't even have enough flavor to be offensive.
Yeah.
You know?
It's shit you mix in other stuff. Like, it is definitely a mixer.
Yeah. Like, I would mix it with, like, potting soil and, like, or some marijuana or something. Like,
maybe make some ice cubes out of it and put it in real whiskey.
There you go. I wouldn't want to do that. It might water it down too much.
Oh, Tom and Cecil, thank you so much for joining us. You know, everybody knows you that listens to podcasts, but we have some new listeners and international listeners that might not be aware of who you guys are. Maybe you'd be so kind to give us a quick bio.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Cecil, and that other voice, the deep, rich tones of my co-host, Tom.
Thomas Smith.
Yeah. we run a podcast out of Chicago called Cognitive Dissonance, and it's a atheist skeptical news show, and we've been doing it now for 400 and almost 60 episodes, and it's been going on for quite a long time. We're coming up on 10 years soon.
We do 400 episodes a week, so we're really a week and a half in.
So,
but yeah, we're working hard.
We've been doing it for quite some time, and we have a lot of fun when we do it. We curse and kid around and tell horrible stories about religion and skepticism, and then we make fun of people that we play clips of. Mostly they're religious fanatics.
Yeah, I'm sitting over here nodding along to what Cecil is saying, so if you heard my nodding through the mic, the fuck is wrong? We've taken too long off, Cecil. I can't even remember how to speak.
Do you guys plan anything out for any of the shows, or do you just walk in and wing it?
So we share a list of stories. So Tom will find stories during the week. He'll send those stories to me on Wednesday night. And on Thursday, I will come to the office. We have a studio in Chicago, and we will just talk about the stuff. Yeah. We don't plan anything out. We just laugh and kid around with each other. Tom and I have been friends for 20 plus years now. And so
we've been friends more than half of my life at this point.
So the thing is that the good thing about that is that Tom and I, we love to make each other laugh, and we're very good friends. And so, like, we just have good, frank conversations, and we also like to laugh a lot. And so we just try to make each other laugh.
We're both easy targets, which is good. You know, nobody sells somebody like a salesman, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, exactly.
Well, that kind of goes against what I thought. I didn't know Tom did any work on the podcast. That kind of goes against the persona there.
It's the one thing he does.
Okay.
It takes 6 minutes. It's the whole thing, start to finish. Yeah. 6 minutes.
Yeah, let this guy. It lasts longer than his sex.
Well, I was about to say, is that his sex? The 6 minutes there.
I'm good for. A
it's like four. It's like four of my sexes. So.
That includes foreplay, right?
Oh yeah. What is foreplay? What is that again? I don't really know.
I think that's where she blows you so you get hard, right? Well, that's.
No, right. I'm married, Tom.
I'm over 40. It's a requirement. We're not having fun if not.
Normally, there's Kirsten and Christina with us, but they're...
I am so glad they're not here.
I am so glad that they're
not here.
You can't say that. Christina's the biggest fan.
Wait till
I feel bad for it.
She's
going to
be crushed. She's going to be crushed.
Yeah, you say that now because you're not used to talking to us, but believe me, halfway through, you're going to be begging for those girls. Begging, I tell you.
Actually, you know what? Where is it?
Wouldn't be the first time I was begging for girls. I was a teenager, so
that's true. Actually, Christina sent me a message. She wanted to make sure that you guys both receive on her behalf. If you'd be so kind, she says, "Dear Tom and Cecil, I don't remember how I stumbled upon the glory hole that is your podcast, but I have never regretted a single moment that I have spent with you both. Thank you for sharing your time and energy to shine a light on the ridiculous aspect of religion, politics, and general superstition. You showed me that my anger in the face of persecution is valid, and that it's okay to laugh at the worst of the situation. Since I was 12, I've had severe mental health issues, and that make almost every day a battle. In my worst days, the concept of happiness feels so foreign that I question if I've ever actually really felt it. Even though in those black hole days, you two always make me smile. You both have the ability to make me laugh so hard I'm clutching my sides when all I want to do is curl up and cry. You both, through your podcast, have been such a light in my darkest days. Thank you for all your wonderful work. So, Christina,
why not? Yeah, remember that joke I made about how I'm glad they're not here? Yeah. All right, that made-up letter you just read makes me feel bad about that.
Yeah, you want to take that back now, big mouth, huh? No, just kidding.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, that's
I'm fine. Not crying, you're crying.
Why is my wife sending you messages?
That's because I'm French.
They have almost as much fun as we do.
Oh, I know. It's almost. They're like the American version of...
Yeah, exactly.
They're like the watered-down version of our podcast.
Yeah, somewhat. But I think if they stick with it, they're
going
to be okay.
Yeah, I think these guys are going somewhere. They're going somewhere.
It's a flash in the pan.
Yeah. 400 episodes. They're going somewhere, I think.
Yeah, they're going somewhere.
Guys, you know, what has been the most inspiring thing within the atheism movement for you guys? That you found over the years.
I got an answer for that.
All right. Oh, boy.
The same as Tom's answer. We just raised $122,000 for Modest Needs through the atheist community. And when I say when Tom and I raised it, we did a thing called Vulgarity for Charity. Mm-hmm. So what we did was people could donate to Modest Needs. $50 got you a guaranteed roast, and they could choose whoever they wanted. They could choose a loved one, or they could choose a famous person. And all they had to do, if they chose a loved one, they should send in a photo or whatever. But then we basically roasted those people in a thing we call Vulgarity for Charity, where we just string a bunch of roasts together. And the people sent in a ton of money. Tom and I made dick jokes and kidded around with the guys from Scathing Atheist for, you know, maybe a couple hours. But our listeners and their listeners together raised $70,000, and there was a generous match from a anonymous donor that Modest Needs hooked up that gave $50,000, matched up to $50,000 of the money.
$122,000 in total.
Wow.
That's fantastic.
So we just wrapped that, and like I don't think I was saying before, like I've never felt better about being able to be a part of anything.
Yeah.
Like that's of all the things that I've had the unbelievable fortune to be a part of. Just being able to be a small part of that was just fucking incredible.
Yeah, we ran a couple months long when we first started this show. Mm-hmm. Within the first year, we ran a couple months long, a couple months long charity drive for Doctors Without Borders, and we raised $8,000 by ourselves back then, and we thought it was the world. We were just blown away by how much we had raised. And then in the following couple of years, we kept on doing charity drives. And then we teamed up with Scathing Atheist, who's also an absolute powerhouse in this niche.
Yeah.
And they were like, between our fans and their fans, we've been raising, you know, last time we did this, we raised $25,000. And now, you know, the sky's the limit for next time. Now we're looking for donors, big donors ahead of time, because we really want to make it bigger than the last time every time.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the charity, you guys, we're doing this for Modest Needs, which is not super familiar to us, but from what I hear, it's a charity that basically takes essentially what it says, right? Modest Needs. They just give a small donation to people that need a car payment or need little things just to keep them, you know, on the flat, I guess.
Yeah, things that
to keep you on this side of that poverty line.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Those things make a difference in everyday life. You know, good on you guys. You have fun, and it's for a good cause. It's a win-win.
Yeah, and it was only a $50 donation that got him a roast on their show. But for us Canadians, of course, that represents like $3,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you got? You guys use money up there, or what?
Cases of maple syrup.
Very colorful money. It's made of plastic.
It's still a barter system, right? It's still
two beaver pelts, a gallon of maple syrup. One of those French-Canadian hats that they
wear.
Right,
yeah. You got to give it to one of their horse cops or something to deliver it.
Horse cops!
Yeah, when you get the big ones, you get the moose people cop, you know?
Moose cops. Oh, that's awesome.
And now you guys are in Chicago, right?
Yes, we are indeed.
Yes. On purpose?
The rich parts of Chicago are nice.
Hold on. What fucking pine tree are you crying up there?
Hold on, his crank radio is wearing out. He's got
a... I'll accept Vancouver and Toronto.
That's exactly it. We're very close to Vancouver here, so...
Are you actually in Chicago, or are you...
Yeah, I live in downtown Chicago, Tom lives outside of Chicago, and our studio is in downtown Chicago.
You lived in Chicago, didn't you?
I was born... That's right. That's my hometown for a long
time. Oh, is it? Whereabouts? Yeah.
Lived there for a long time. I lived on the north side. I lived near Carmen and Broadway, between Broadway and Clark.
I lived at 528 West Wellington, which was maybe 3 or 4 blocks from where you just said, Broadway and Clark. So
wow. As
a kid, I lived 63rd and Mayfield down by Midway Airport, which is not where you want to live now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is why I stopped living there.
I live in the South Loop now.
Yeah.
No, I love Chicago. It's one of the greatest cities in the world. It's nice to talk to you and bring back some of those great days I had there.
How's the pizza up there?
Oh God. Jesus.
How's the pizza up here?
The pizza? Yeah. Oh yeah. Man, it's not. They shouldn't even call it pizza compared to Chicago. No, Italian beef sandwiches and pizza.
Oh. Yeah. You're a woman after my own heart. An Italian beef sandwich is absolutely amazing.
You know, Nancy's an expat. Obviously, she's been all over the U.S. and and she was one of the smarter Americans and decided to become a Canadian. So we're hoping you guys do that too one day.
If it wasn't so cold and desolate and pointless up there, I would move.
I could see the pointless, the cold and desolate. It toughens you up.
wait a minute, are you fighting me? Oh, wait a minute. I thought you were going to fight me on the pointless, but like you're fighting me on the cold parts.
Yeah. I would never make it that easy for you, Tom.
I will tell you this though. There's been so many times in the last 2 years that I've just looked across the border and I've stared at your prime minister in a dirty, dirty way. In a way that is just, I violated him with my eyes. I was just like, I would do anything to have that guy as our leader in comparison to what we have.
Since we have a bit of an international podcast, are you guys willing to say mea culpa for the rest of the world for having Trump?
I don't apologize for him because I didn't vote for him and nor would I ever support any of his policies. I don't even support, even if they're like, he's like, I'm going to give $100 million to all the fucking school children in the world back. Fuck that guy. So I can't apologize for him because I would never represent him. But I do feel embarrassed.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I feel a sense of genuine shame in my country that we aren't better than what we've done.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I thought we were better than that. Yeah. I really did. And when we turned out not to be better, that was really a moment of national reckoning, I think, for a lot of people in this country to look around and be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
I thought
it was going to go better.
Yeah. It's like for 4 years, you've got that like burning bile taste in the back of your throat. Like you're just this side of fucking puking all the time.
Yeah.
Well, guys, there's an open invitation up here. You just have to remember that we have stronger beer and hockey is better than baseball. That's all you need.
I wouldn't watch.
I think you're probably right about that.
And Vancouver is cool.
Guys do, or whatever that is.
I think hockey is better than baseball. I think you're absolutely right.
Way more physical.
I don't like hockey, but I don't like baseball either. So
I mean, a cigarette burn on the arm is better than a cigarette burn in the eye, but like it's still a cigarette burn. I don't.
Come on, well, we're the best places to live on the planet. We've been like number 2, I think, this year again. So come on, give us a break.
I love Canada.
Yeah, I think Canada's great.
Yeah, I went fishing there once, and there were a lot of fish that I caught. Yeah. And
I've been to Toronto a couple times. I've been to Guelph, a place called Guelph.
I know Guelph.
Yeah, a friend of mine was going to school there, and so I would travel up and visit him, and it was wonderful. The people were sweet, and it was great. And he's right; they have good beer, and you just hang out and chill. And it was
Where
fun.
Is Guelph?
It's in between Flint, Michigan, and Toronto on a road.
How's the water?
No, the water's great.
Better than Flint.
That's for sure. Anywhere is better than Flint.
Well, Christina sent a question that I think you guys are going to have fun with. She wants to know what was your best interaction with one of your fans.
Well, I married one of our fans. So,
well, there you go.
I feel like if I don't call that one out, that's not going to work out for me.
That's a good one.
So,
does she feel the same way?
I have two in mind. So the first one was when we were in Glasgow, Scotland. We were doing a Skeptics in the Pub.
So fun.
And a young woman walks up to me and says, I drove all day to get here, or I took a train all day to get here. I forget what it was, just to meet you guys. And she was the sweetest lady, and we had drinks with her and talked to her, and she was super sweet. And then we had the exact same experience when we were in Australia. Somebody said they got on a motorcycle, rode
700 kilometers or something.
Oh my gosh.
To get to just to come to Sydney to see us.
Unbelievable.
And so that those are the two interactions that I think, you know, really stand out in my mind.
You know, honestly, like, we've had so much support, and the support has meant so much. Like, the show has changed. I mean, it has literally changed the entirety of my life. Like, my life, I would not have anywhere near the same kind of life that I have, the same kind of opportunities. I would not have met some of the most important people in my life. And if it wasn't for the show, it's been a uniformly positive experience. Like, in every way, I don't know what we did to deserve it. I don't, but I'm so fucking grateful.
Well, you did.
For
you're
it.
Damn good so at what fun. You do. That's why. Yeah, exactly. That's why you deserve
and,
it.
And yet, these two won't even cross the 49th parallel to come and visit us, Moose people. Like, can you believe that?
Moose people. Well, I don't know. Like, is it like a full moon, mare woose? Where moose? Mare woose? I don't know how that works up there. When I went fishing up in Ontario, and like in the middle of nowhere, and it was a lot of fun. But I remember driving, and like, there's all these signs like danger mouse or danger moose or whatever. Like, and I was like, that's a hell of a superhero. Like, it's danger moose. It's like danger moose. And I was like, it made me think of danger mouse, you know?
Like, here I come to save the day.
It just like flies out, this giant moose with a cape. Like, I love
here I come to a.
Here I come a. to wreck your car.
What is it in the atheist movement that you guys have been doing this for quite a while that you found that's been most disappointing to you guys?
On my end, some of the pointless divisiveness that, you know, is endemic in any population once it reaches a certain size. The sexual harassment problem is fucking stupid and doesn't need to happen. And people should just fucking behave and cut that shit out. That's obnoxious. And it's just pointless and doesn't need to occur and is mean, and doesn't have any place in this community at all. I think that's about the only thing. You know, other than that, atheism in and of itself isn't much of an organizing force. Humanism's a good organizing force.
Yeah.
If you can get to humanism from atheism, you've taken step two. If you're stuck on step one, I don't know that there's a whole lot organizing wise around that.
We lost a lot of listeners because of that.
Really?
Like, a while back, because of because we recognized ourselves as humanists. Now, this was early on.
Yeah.
But when we first started out, we would get messages from people and be like, you guys are mixing too much humanism with this atheism stuff. I just want to hate on religion. And we'd be like, no, we want people to be good to each other. Like, that's the key. It's like, you know, there's, you know, I can be good without God, and other people should be able to be good without God. And we want to talk about the morality of the things that we're talking about, not just the, you know, God is wrong. If you want a God is wrong argument, go watch a Christopher Hitchens debate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's good.
Go listen to Matt Dillahunty. Yeah, he'll do a great
Matt
job.
Matt Dillahunty does it every week on Atheist Experience. People call him up and say, I believe in God. And he's like, nope. And then he just tells them why they're wrong every week. There's people who do it so much better. But, you know, what we wanted to do was talk about, when we talk about politics, the reason why we even started talking about politics was because of how religion invades, especially in the United States, everybody's life. And so when we did that, you know, we also brought into that not only politics, but also, you know, humanism. And some people really didn't like that, and they pushed back against it, and then they just left because we weren't going to change. So
You can't please you anticipated my next question. You can't really please anybody, and your show does have a very political tone to it in a lot of your stories. And for the record, Nancy, Tom has been nothing but gentle with me. I would never, ever, never complain.
That's good to know. It's
that's
to
why
know.
We set the safe word. It's just, it's good. Safe word.
Cinnamon.
Is
cinnamon. All right.
We better not tell him I'm a trained assassin. This is not the time to bring it.
Well, you may not know, Nancy is actually the original wandering Jew of legend, and she's a trained assassin. So.
All right.
Everybody
stay up
tendency.
North. Good. Just stay up
that's
there.
That's fine.
We're going to build a wall or something. Yeah, no, you're too white. Yeah, we won't build a wall to keep you out. It's fine.
Yeah, just like this.
Building a
wall.
Yeah, they might build a wall.
They're going to build a wall to keep us out.
Yeah.
I can't believe this. I always go back on that story about Trump going to the president of Spain and saying, you guys should just build a wall across the Sahara. I was like, really? This is your guy? Come on. It's like, what the
That's
hell?
Right. It's not anyone's guy.
It's coming
shit.
To an end one way or the other.
I sure hope so.
You know, Humpty Dumpty is going to fall off that wall.
I could not hope for anything more
than
that.
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
I really couldn't hope
for
more.
Oh, my God.
Well, speaking of hope, where do you guys hope to see this? Well, you can't really call it an atheist movement, but let's call it that for the sake of the show. Where do you guys think we're going to see the atheism in about 5 years?
I think that the numbers are going to continue to grow. The fastest growing demographic among young people is what they call the nones, N-O-N-E-S. And those are the people who are not religiously affiliated. And I think the atheist numbers are about, they're guessing between 7 and 17%. They're not sure what the atheist numbers are in the United States. You know, they guess based on people that are either non-denominational or that are not practicing those types of things. But there's a lot of people, and we've talked to a couple of different people, atheist leaders, who have said the same thing, which is there's a lot of people who are sitting in the pews going to church that are not believers. They're just doing it because it's community and it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a moment in the future where people start leaving religion in droves. And I feel like within the next 5 years, we could see a jump in those numbers. Now, I don't know how big those numbers will eventually get. But I think there will always be people who believe in some sort of God or some sort of higher power, some religion. I know that that's always going to be true. But I do think that those numbers are going to continue to grow. And we're going to, you know, eventually, I think, you know, we could reach, you know, in many, many years, right before we die from global warming, we could see as many as
in 13 years, 14.
Yeah, like in about 14 years, you could see as much as 7 or 8% of the people who have switched over. So.
I would echo and say, you know, my hope would be that in a handful of years, the atheist community becomes a political force that has to at least be recognized.
Yes.
Right now, the atheist community is not a strong political force. And so, although there is a significant number of people that are non-religious in some form or fashion, they are being, you know, primarily quiet about that. I think that the more numerous they are, the more politically engaged they are, the more that they will need to be taken seriously as, you know, a political force. And I'd like to see that.
Yeah, which is so ironic, because the numbers of nuns or atheists or non-religious is far, far superior to a lot of groups, whether it's the Jews or the Black African-American community.
Well, the Jews control the media.
Oh, so yeah, of course. Yeah, we forgot that.
That helps them with their message.
This is why you guys are friends with Eli, right?
And they're lizard people.
Yeah, and they are lizard people.
Yeah. So, I mean, that fourth dimensional shit.
Well, it's going to be interesting if in the future you get some politician that says, yeah, man, I really want to get after that atheist vote.
Atheist
that's
going
to put that's going to put me over the top.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think it needs to happen.
You'll see more out politicians, too. Yeah. You'll see more, because I think that there's probably plenty of politicians now that are probably atheists that just don't come out, that just pretend to go to church once in a while.
It's young people that have to vote.
Yes.
Because young people are, I mean, like you were saying, like so many of them are non-religious and they just need to fucking vote.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they'll matter.
Yeah.
They don't matter when they don't vote. Yeah. They're not relevant.
Absolutely.
But I think the indivisible group has started the impetus toward young people vote. I mean, the midterm vote showed that there were a lot more voters that came out because they cared than had before. And that's a good sign.
Guys, when I started listening to your show, which I follow religiously, by the way,
I don't know how to feel about that.
I used to think that, you know, it was a show by atheists for atheists. But since you guys do so much politics, and even Christina's letter kind of basically attests to this, maybe you guys are not so much a show for atheists by atheists, but maybe you're almost an introduction to the whole movement of atheism by itself. Do you guys feel it's different in that sense, or?
I don't know. I think at this point, you can't disconnect religion from politics in the States, right? You know, like, it's impossible to disconnect them. You've got issues where, you know, certain types of research are being discontinued because there are religious concerns with it. Those things are just, they're so intertwined here in the States. I don't know if they are up in Canada or not, but here in the States they're so intertwined. I don't think you can discuss religion without discussing politics if you're talking about current affairs, if you're talking about what's happening this week in the world.
I mean, unless you're talking about, you know, a priest diddling a kid. And, you know, those stories are so frequent and so boring that we basically skip them unless there's something extraordinary
yeah,
about it.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Well, Tom and Cecil, you guys might not know this, but by agreeing to come on our show today, you guys are ambassadors for your country. And, of course, we do know that sometimes you guys have some differences of opinion that have come over the years. But, you know, as being the younger brother and sometimes wiser brother, us in Canada, we decide to appeal to a higher authority to come to help you guys agree to something. So we decide to write to Her Majesty the Queen. And she decided to send a letter back.
Nice. Awesome.
Okay.
She's a sweetheart. I like her.
Yeah, absolutely.
I liked her when I... Yeah, no, I mean...
I hate that lady.
I thought she was all right.
Doesn't bake good cookies either. Fucking just terrible drama.
Half-hearted blowjob.
Terrible grammar.
Jesus Christ. Put your back into it, Queen. Come on.
We haven't even started the show.
I know it's for me, but pretend you're having fun, okay, really. Right? Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah. And I wear the crown.
Her cookies are called corgis, too.
It took me a week to recover from what you did with that scepter. The least she could do is hook me up, you know?
Oh, God.
He's aggressive. Stronger arms than you'd think. Are we doing your show? Let's do your show.
This is a show. Before
Queen of England raped me.
Before Tom gets going on the Queen of England like he did when he was in England.
I like brittle bones and papery skin, buddy.
You can just, like, when you smell it, you just smell the osteoporosis. It was like,
oh, my God, it's like a cadaver dog farted in here.
Now we all know why Donald Trump walked in front of her.
Did she write it on a swan? Because only accept letters from the Queen if they're written on a swan.
Don't you guys still like the Queen up there?
Yeah, what's your relationship with
you guys,
the Queen?
Don't you guys, like, still think she's a thing?
Isn't she on all your money?
Well, not all the money, but some of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got
they have more than one money. I didn't know they had more than one money up there.
Yeah, we quit her cold turkey. So.
Well, we got a letter from Her Majesty the Queen here, so I'm going to read this, and I'd like to see what you guys like to react to this.
Yeah, pretty exciting.
The present decree from the office of Her Most Excellent Majesty, Queen Elizabeth Alexandra Mary II, from the House of Windsor, Queen of the UK and Commonwealth Realms, daughter of George VI.
Oh my God, I'm already
asleep. We call her Liz for short. Liz.
The present decree is to be considered by the Republic of the United States of America. We understand that you are a young country eager to do things your way. But after the recent election of the 45th president, the House of Windsor feels it needs to help guide the nation in your troubling adolescence. In the matter of donut versus Danish.
Oh.
It is the decree of the House of Windsor that Danishes are a far superior pastry.
Oh, yeah.
And are to be enjoyed instead of donuts in the earlier part of the day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Donuts are more suited as an afternoon sweet, but are to be avoided in higher society.
See, that's garbage food for poor people. That's exactly what she said.
That's because she's the worst.
That's from the Queen.
Yeah.
And I now like
she has a raspberry center, too.
In the matter of Neapolitan ice cream etiquette, it is an inexcusable sin to scoop a cross like only a 5-year-old would.
It guarantees the right ratios. It's the right way to do it.
Presentation of ice cream is of preliminary importance and denotes proper etiquette. The mishmash of uncomplimentary
stuffy frou-frou fucking pinky out high tea bullshit Neapolitan ice cream.
Why'd you dip your fucking Danish in it, Tom?
The mishmash of non-complimentary colors and those elective etiquette only fit for the foul-mouthed fustularians.
Okay, that's fair.
In the matter of eggnog, the drink, the popular amongst the aristocracy, also known as egg milk punch. However, the horrible...
Think about that. Yeah, why would it be known by that?
Yeah, break that down and don't throw up afterwards. Yeah. I dare you.
Hey, this milk could use some eggs in it.
And punch. The horrible cream mixture sold in U.S. markets, masquerading as nog, is not just revolting, but akin to attending an Offspring concert at the age of 50. This court decrees that if you do nog, you made it from scratch and should be sweetened with Crown Royal Canadian whiskey.
We made it from scratch once.
Yeah, and the Queen is high.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. That's the worst.
We did make it from scratch, and it's from the worst. It was the most amazing actual cooking experience of my life because we took a handful of ingredients, all of which I liked, And then we took all these wonderful things. When we put them together in the right order,
yeah,
it turned them all into moose shit. Yeah. Like, it was
the
just,
worst.
It was awful.
It's the worst.
It smelled good.
Nobody.
And then all of a sudden, something, something. Ignored.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I can't say, man. This is from the queen herself, guys.
Yeah, well.
You know, the case is settled, I guess.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, guys, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh,
we really appreciate
it. Thanks for having us. It was a real fun time. Thanks again for having
us. It was a fun time, and it's good that you're from Chicago, because now I've got you two guys, and Chicago is part of my favorite things in my life, so thanks. Uh-huh. Thanks for both.
Well, come on down. I don't know if we're still allowing you guys into the country.
Yeah.
See if you can pass that Canadian ban.
See, you got going. Well, we did a show the other day where we actually smoked marijuana because it's now legal up here. So actually, I don't think we're allowed now in the States. So the mic is all yours, guys. Be shameless. Go ahead, plug yourself. If people want to find out more about Tom and Cecil and the Cognitive Dissonance, where can they find you?
You can find our podcast at dissonancepod.com. We also do another show with Scathing Atheist guys called Citation Needed. We've been on your show before talking about Citation Needed, citationpod.com.
That's right.
It's a show that doesn't have a lot of listeners, but we really enjoy doing it.
It's so much fun.
We love to do it. It's a lot of fun, and it's a really funny show that takes a single topic each week from Wikipedia, and then we just make jokes about it, and we have a blast. So if you want to give us each of those shows a try, you can just check out those websites.
Oh, perfect. Tom Cecil, before I let you go, I got to have you say, hi, this is Tom and Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance, and I took a left, or we took a left, at the Valley.
Hi, this is Tom. No.
Hi.
Tom, why are you leaving?
I don't know.
Who are you?
I thought we were going at the same time.
No, we're not. No,
I go,
hi, this is Cecil. You say this is
all right.
And I already forgot the rest.
All right. Well, here you go.
Okay.
Hi,
Cecil.
This is Tom.
God damn it. And I took
a left
at the Valley
podcast.org.
Oh, that's wonderful. And that was none other than Tom and Cecil of Cognitive Dissonance.
So
I'm so sorry you missed that.
That's okay, because now I get to go and listen to it.
I get to join
all of our listeners and be one of them.
Maybe one day.
Experience it with them.
I will finally be here for an interview with them.
Yeah, we've got to have them back. It was so much fun.
I was really, really honored by the fact that they actually remembered being on the show previously, because this is their second time with us.
They remembered me.
You weren't even...
I was there the first time.
That was
my first time ever being on this show.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Your first episode ever on the show was with Tom and Cecil?
Yes, because that's why you brought me on.
Oh, wow.
It was when we were interviewing. It was for the Citation Needed. It was Tom and Cecil and Eli.
I knew there was a good reason I brought her on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that was before my first episode, because we recorded it before. And then that's the first time I was on here.
So in other words, you owe me.
I do. Well, I owe them. Because if it wasn't them, you wouldn't have brought me on. Because you knew how much I loved them.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, guys, for being on the show today, and thank you for listening. And you can follow us at leftofthevalley.com. You can follow us at Facebook, at Twitter, at LETV Podcast. Send us an email, leftatvalley@outlook.com. Send your complaints to Nancy on the third floor.
But make sure you have, like, vibranium shield when
exactly.
you do it, to catch all those bullets.
And not one the size of a dinner plate.
Give us a 5-star review wherever you find us. That really helps us. It helps others find the show. Coming up next week, it's Christmas. That's our Christmas special anyway. So we'll be talking about a lot of the history of Christmas and stuff that you might, the origins that might actually surprise you. After that, we'll have our last show of the year, which will be a year in review as voted by you, according to our downloads, which were the most top 10 most popular shows of the year.
And our favorites.
Next year, we'll be starting the year with Andrew Jasko and talk about Life After Dogma. And we'll also have our friend Rich Lyons. He was with us for the Stone Show.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to talk to him again.
His podcast, Life After Faith.
You think he'll like us when we're sober?
Yes.
I think so. We're likable. And also have Christian Christensen. We'll be facing off against John, the Godless Engineer, on the debate of historicity of Jesus. And the ladies from Forsaking Faith are coming back, and we'll be talking about, is the Bible good literature?
That's going to be a really interesting conversation.
And then after that, we'll have Zach from the Zachrilege podcast. We'll be talking to us as well in February. And we'll also have the incredible Matt Dillahunty. So it's going to be a strong beginning of the year yet again.
Yeah. Can you believe that it's been a whole year?
Well, we're going on 5 years now.
Really?
Yeah. In March, it's going to be 5 years.
I've only been here for like 2.
Well, that's okay. The first 3 are probably canceled anyway.
It improves significantly when I show.
We're getting better with time.
Time flies when you're having fun.
We're like wine. We improve in age.
We do. We really do.
Oh, perfect. Well, until then, ladies, thank you so much. Until next time.
Teaching them to respect them.
Fuck that.
The system is broke down, working backwards, and the only action or tactic I plan to practice now is to attack them. The parties of God's hands are bloodstained, millions of murders by believers, and they're all in God's name. And let me take a sec, don't mean to sound so hateful, but I swear to God, pun intended, I find it disgraceful that many atheists are told to be quiet. You're not alone, speak your mind. Time to let it be known. I'm proud to be an atheist, a skeptic, and non-